Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 20th of December. This is The Informer. I'm your host, Daniel Roberts.
And I'm Darcy Meehan. On tonight's episode, we take a look at both the Midsummer and Mardi Gras festivals. How are our queer festivals changing with their ever-evolving LGBTI narrative?
We talk to Jason Toison McSheen about the Better Together conference, which kicks off in early January in 2018, and hear from two Best Drag Venue nominees from this year's Melbourne Drag Awards.
First off, The Informer's Ruby Mountford speaks to Alison King from the Aurora Group, who had recently announced that LGBTI community groups will benefit from over $65,000 worth in grants, funded by the Aurora Group. Ruby started off by asking Alison what Aurora is.
The Aurora Group is a charity that raises money to help and support LGBTI community organisations and projects. We are based in New South Wales, so we do have a focus on things in New South Wales, but we always encourage organisations that have a national focus to engage with us and to apply for our grants as well. We were founded about 20 years ago, and there are a group of friends in Sydney. At the time, they saw that most of the funding in the space was going to HIV and AIDS-related issues, and they were just aware that there were a lot of smaller groups doing wonderful things that weren't getting a look in into the funding as a result.
Yep.
So it's something that we've been basically built fit for purpose, and we've kind of stuck to those roots. We continue to raise money by organising unique events of celebration where we can actually fundraise. And then every year we put together our small grants program where we encourage young and small and coalface groups to apply to get funding from us for their projects.
Since you were founded back in 1999, you've awarded almost $900,000 in grants, so a huge amount of money for small communities.
Yeah, we're really proud of that, and we keep aiming to build it bigger and better every year. We've got some lovely relationships that we've had through, I think, a succession of grants. So some groups have only received one from us. Some of them have been receiving grants from us for many years. So it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to take groups that normally wouldn't see a lot of funding, but they can stretch it so far and they can do so much with it. So we get to have a relationship with them. We get to check in, see how they're going, seeing if there's anything else we can help with. So we find that those relationships really grow beautifully.
So you could say almost that Aurora is like the fertilizer for grassroots.
Sure. I'll give you a good example.
Yep.
I think we've been funding the Gender Centre here in Sydney going on 8 or 9 years, not every year, but the first year I think our grant went to them to basically purchase bedding for their emergency shelter. So we've gone from that to funding small videos that talk about the personal experiences of transgendered people. That's gone on to do amazing things. So the Gender Centre is a really good example of a group that we started a relationship with a long time ago, and we keep checking in to see how they're going and how we can improve their impact.
There's Christmas coming early for seven groups in the community that are sharing in $65,000, and that was just announced today. So what are the groups you'll be supporting next year?
Well, it's lucky we timed this well. It's a nice Christmas feeling to give money away at Christmas time. There's six groups that are in the Small Grants Program, and that's the Bellingen Neighbourhood Centre. There's also Bolton Clark, who are an aged care service provider, a wonderful initiative called Dress for Success, Northcott Innovations, they're a health-based organisation, the Outstanding Short Story Competition, which is one of our favourites, we've been funding them for a while, and the Women and Girls Emergency Centre here in Sydney. So it's a nice broad spectrum, actually. We've got groups that are really focusing on particular needs of our community, and it's a nice variety. We think we've got a lot of the bases covered. Lucky, we don't always get that. And then our major recipient, which we give to every year, is 2010 Incorporating Gay and Lesbian Counselling Service. They were the group we were actually conceived to fund. So we've had a relationship with them since then. We're still discussing what the projects are going to be for next year. It's really exciting, but we'll keep you posted.
There's been a lot on the news over the last few months about the amount of stress that have been put on counselling services for LGBTI people because of huge spikes in requests. So I imagine this kind of money will help provide a lot of relief at a time where they might be seeing quite a high demand.
Absolutely. When talking to the beneficiaries from this year and last year's grants, we were talking to them to see how their services were being affected, and across the board, they all reported a spike in requests for their services. It would be nice to see how those services react and respond and mature after we've had the heavy demand on their resources.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au, or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The Informer's Ruby Mountford there talking to Alison King from the Aurora Group. Now that marriage equality is done and dusted, what next for our community? This is just one of the questions that many people will be asking at the Better Together conference, which kicks off on the 12th of January. Jason Twison McSheen from the Equality Project spoke to me earlier to fill us in on all that's in store for the conference and what he's most looking forward to.
Oh, so much is planned. Over 60 sessions, four plenaries. We expect 450 plus people to turn up from all over Australia, and we have GLAAD and the Human Rights Campaign and Stonewall from overseas coming as well. But we're planning on having a conversation around what do we do next. You know, we just had the marriage stuff all finally passed, which was wonderful. But it's really timely to have that discussion about, you know, how do we work together more collaboratively going forward, and what do we need to do to get where we need to go faster. And so the conference is covering not every area there is in the LGBTIQ space, but most areas. But it's also facilitating a discussion about how we might want to organise together and have the capacity to collaborate in a more strategic way going forward than perhaps what we've done to this point.
Jason, I've spoken to you about this before, and I think it was when the launch was just about to go ahead for the Better Together conference. And one thing you mentioned was that sort of a byproduct of the postal survey was that it brought the community together. Is that something that you're going to be is that one of the focuses of the conference, about how all the different letters actually can work together?
Absolutely. So we're going to have a separate lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, Indigenous people of queer people of colour caucuses, and they will go through some really interesting questions each in those sessions, and then present back to the final plenary on the last day. We also have the community impact survey, which has been done this past 12 months, will be revealed and launched at the conference in the first session, around who we are, how we collaborate, what our needs are, how do we operate, do we have funding, do we wish to collaborate further, and things that hinder us in our advocacy. And so I think that along with some of the sessions that are specifically set aside around, you know, how do we work together, and there's training around, there's media training that GLAAD are doing. There's also mediation training that a professional man from California, Dr. Robert Simon, is going to conduct. But all of these things together will hopefully provide a mechanism for us to build stronger relationships with each other over the 2 days, but also understand what each other's doing and see where we can align ourselves with each other. Because I don't think the strategy of diminishing each other or working in our silos is a good strategy going forward.
In terms of media training, is that for people that are interested in being involved in LGBTI media? How does that work?
So that room holds 150 people. So on Saturday morning, there's a three-hour media training. So it holds 250 people. So that Saturday morning is a three-hour media training unit run by Ross Murray from GLAAD in New York. And it's for anyone who wants to have an understanding of how to tell their story in public, it's only very basics for 3 hours, but how to, you know, answer someone live on air or answer someone live in front of a camera and be confident that you're going to say the right things and that you're not getting drawn into saying something you shouldn't say, to get your comms right, basically. And I don't think we always do our comms very well. And everyone, and whether your organisation is 2 people or 50 people, it does not hurt to have some good media training. So that is being provided as part of the conference fee, but those 250 people who attend that can do that for free as part of going to the conference.
So there is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
How do queer festivals stay relevant and on point with our ever-changing LGBTI narrative? We called on Karen Bryant, CEO of Midsummer, and Therese Cashew, CEO of Sydney Mardi Gras, to give us a taste of what's coming for both festivals and discuss the issues of programming for our diverse community. Let's hear from Mardi Gras' Karen Bryant first.
Well, I guess for me, it's a little easier that I've been working in festivals in a broader sense for over 20 years. So, you know, the notion of festivals as celebrations, but also profile of extraordinary talents as opportunities for people to come together is something that's very familiar to me. Obviously, in our communities, as you say, you know, in the same way Pride March does, or Pride Marches around the world, were very much about protest. That I think that there's been that evolution where there still certainly is elements of that in festivals and marches, but it's a broader need that communities have now to come together. The whole issue of being able to, for some people, to get out of social isolation, but also very much to showcase our stories, individual stories, issues that people are still facing, and showcase the very real talents that people have, whether that's a sporting talent, whether it's a performing talent, a musical or visual arts talent, and festivals play all of those roles for community and very much for all of the individuals that make up those communities.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it is an amazing time for Mardi Gras and 40 years, and we certainly, you know, we take this very seriously and, you know, no pressure at all on us for the 40th to meet community's expectation. But, you know, one of the things we've been doing when we're planning the 40th is to make sure that we look back at our very beginning, so looking at 1978, where we did have a peaceful march that turned protest. And I guess the very beginnings of Mardi Gras was wanting to celebrate on the evening. There was a protest in the morning and the evening was coming out on the streets and celebrating. And Mardi Gras has embraced that all the way through. I suppose, you know, some of the big changes across those 40 years of what we're trying to recognise in our celebrations of being 40, not just the beginning, but what happened in each of those decades? What were the social justice points? What were the actual big topical social and political movements that happened over those 40 years? Including, you know, when we look back through the AIDS era, when we look at when lesbians first marched in a formal way on parade, when our Indigenous friends and family stepped onto the tarmac with us, when trans families and rainbow families joined us. So there's been so many amazing moments. That's what we've been doing, is tracking that and looking at celebrating and acknowledging that incredible history. So I guess getting back to your absolute question of, you know, what changed over that time, were lots. I guess a recognition of that we are an incredibly diverse community. Our LGBTQI letters keep growing and they need to, because our community changes, and that's one of the big changes, is in diversity.
So in terms of education, how much does education play a part when you're planning a festival?
Education for both?
I guess education for the community, education of history, making sure that all that is included, as well as, you know, people go to the party and have a great time.
Absolutely. And it's so important that we do make sure that we are educating that history, and our education and what we're telling people is from trusted advisors.
As Therese mentioned, queer festivals have a responsibility to showcase our LGBTI history in an engaging way. I asked them how Mardi Gras were planning on doing this on their 40th anniversary.
So this year we've created the 40-year timeline, and we've embraced community and brought all our alumni back in to make sure that our timeline, which is every year's activities of Mardi Gras, in a beautiful digital platform with posters and storytelling and people being interviewed, and not just the social changes but also the political changes. So we have a trusted voice there that people can lock into, and also making sure that when we do engage with our community, part of that, and including our queer thinking program, embraces those people that bring the true story, that bring, you know, from the horse's mouth. And working with 78 has been a really important part of that as well, to make sure people do hear those stories and they do hear it from authentic voices.
In terms of the direction of Midsummer in the immediate and near future, Karen fits in on what's planned.
Oh, look, I think, you know, we've certainly tried to avoid the one theme idea because our festival very much is led by the agendas and stories and issues that are raised in our communities that can change on a yearly, a monthly and sometimes even a daily basis. So in terms of where things are heading, you know, we work very hard to obviously have a look at types of things that need to be explored. But, you know, those things can change in the blink of an eye. And, you know, obviously with the historic yes vote recently, there are people who want to celebrate that. There are people who also want to be reflecting beyond that, that there is so much more to achieve beyond yes. And that's a very now thing. And, you know, could we have anticipated that that would have happened exactly in this festival when it's something that's been on the agenda for so many years? Obviously not. But I think, you know, there are some themes that are broader and you can look at over multiple years and issues that, we talk to our trans communities, we often say that visibility for them and identity is one of the biggest things that we can bring for them. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily just something that's specific to one festival. And those that visibility and identity is common across all of our communities. So, you know, I think it's a much broader question for me of listening and keeping our eyes open and being responsive, because we don't talk for our communities. We create spaces for them to talk and be listened to.
Therese Cajou from Mardi Gras rounds up the conversation on the future of our queer festivals and fills us in on the Queer Thinking Program featured at next year's Mardi Gras.
It's a beautiful program and something that we hope to keep growing as a Mardi Gras. It's really where we stand back and go, okay, what are the issues of community? What are the social issues and political issues of our time, and what do we need to focus on? And this year, our Queer Thinking program is underwritten by the Bones of Social Justice, and it asks all those big, hard questions of where has social justice actually made an impact across Mardi Gras and across our 40 years? Where hasn't it made an impact? Or what do we still need to do in relation to social justice? And let's have a call to action here. So look at all the things we've done. Look at the way we've paved the opening and history for our community. But let's stand together now 40 years later and go, okay, where are we going? What does the future look like? And I guess what are the next battles for us, if battles is the right word? But let's not stand on our laurels here because there's work to be done. Even we have marriage equality, but, you know, we don't have equality for our community. And they're the important discussions and debates that we can bring into queer thinking.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Karen Bryant from Midsummer Festival and Therese Cajou from Sydney Mardi Gras. Finally today, we need to celebrate some safe queer spaces. The Melbourne Drag Awards have announced their nominations, and among the categories are Best Drag Venue. Piano Bar in Geelong and Vaudeville in Fitzroy are both nominated. We spoke to Aaron Skinner from Piano Bar and Richard Tuckey from Vaudeville about what it means to be nominated and what the secret is to creating safe and entertaining queer spaces.
We'd like to say a big congratulations to Richard Tuckey from the Vaudeville Bar.
Thank you. Yes, we're really excited about getting the nomination.
And Aaron Skinner from Piano Bar Geelong.
Oh, fantastic to be with you, Dan. And yeah, we're very proud to receive that nomination down in Geelong.
We started the conversations asking how these bars got started.
Sure, we've been open for 10, just under a year actually, 10 months.
So quite recent.
Yeah, very, very recent. It's been something that's been in my mind for many, many years after working for numerous venues in Australia and New Zealand. So I've just been able to put it together myself finally after all these years.
The piano bar always opened as a piano bar where people play, come and listen to great entertainment and singers. And we also just saw that there was a missing piece in entertainment in Geelong. You know, I googled gay venue Geelong, and the first thing that came up was, you know, Mirrabool Street public toilets, which are, you know, local public toilets. It's not a very good look for Geelong.
Not the most entertaining of spaces.
No.
Well, it depends.
You know, we wanted to turn that around, and without also, you know, being labelled completely as a gay venue, because, you know, we do offer different nights to different people right throughout the week, and our whole premises is really being around an all-inclusive venue for everyone, in Geelong to have a great time. So we decided to have Sunday nights hosted by Filmerbox and Art Simone. And we started out with that operating monthly in a 50-seat venue to now weekly in a 200-seat venue. And they also come down on Wednesday for Bitches with Balls or Drag Bingo. So, yeah, we're really happy with that, how that's happened. And it's also been, from being heavily involved in the LGBTI plus space down in Geelong and helping out the community where we can, particularly organisations like Geelong Rainbow Inc. We're happy to be a gold sponsor of theirs and, you know, worked hard with them on the Yes campaign and provided a really safe and supportive place during that campaign, which, as you and a lot of your listeners know, was a difficult time for a lot of people. And after any rally or event that was done in Geelong, we always put on something there that we could come together and meet and discuss. And yeah, really worked hard during that Yes campaign. We were known as Yes Bar Geelong.
What is it that makes these drag bars so special?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world, and we really have the most uplifting and enjoyable time here. It's got a lot of shade. There's a lot of rude words going on, but it's been all done in fun and love for each other as people and as a community. So we only ever get uplifted here, and that's really one of our whole ethos, is about supporting each other, diversity, and also, you know, accepting change and, you know, rolling with it. So we've been very lucky to be able to promote that, and we've only been open for, as I said, less than a year, but we've had over 300 five-star reviews with what we've got going on here. So I'm super stoked with that vision for us.
I think our staff and our team have a lot to do with that. We couldn't do it without them. We provide, you know, a really good service experience to anyone coming in into the venue, and then obviously it's the entertainment on top of that. We really invest heavily in our entertainment, whether it is piano players, singers, or drag performers, to make sure that we, you know, we have high quality shows and events that happen on each occasion, so people's expectations are always met or always exceeded, and just ensuring that, you know, that quality is there, and also keeping it fresh.
Being queer-friendly spaces, we wanted to know what it was like during the postal survey.
We really noticed the fact that we were able to uplift people, so whenever we would mention it here, we would just get nothing but cheers. And a lot of our audience, especially for our drag cabaret show, they're obviously from the non-GLBTI community, so they just really adore what we do and what we kind of stand for, and that we're amazingly talented drag artists. So every time we've mentioned it, certainly here, we only get nothing but support. But funnily enough, everywhere I go, people know me, especially in Fitzroy, where our venue is, they'll just drop into conversation that they can't wait till their gay friends get married, or so I'm lucky. I'm in an area where the Yes Vote is well supported, but it's really, you know, those other areas in the country that probably don't have access to what we have here in Fitzroy. So we have had a lot of people come in from interstate, from small country towns, have the best times and not actually be part of our community, but come in, they want to see a dinner and show, and then they realise that, you know, it's drag queens and that we are very talented and we've got a very supportive community. So we have been very lucky. We've only had a lot of positivity around us.
Exactly, yeah. Everyone knows that, you know, you're free to be, and, you know, no one's going to judge you in our space, and if they do, then they won't be there for long.
With Christmas fast approaching, what's on at Vodevile and the Piano Bar?
Oh, well, we're on our second night of our Christmas edition of Bitches with Balls. We had one last night that was completely sold out, and again, we're sold out tonight, where we've got some great Christmas prizes, and Art Simone and Polly Phil are doing some fantastic Christmas drag numbers. And then this coming Sunday, we have a special Christmas edition of Pitch Please, which is our Sunday drag night, and we have Filmerbox, Jemima Hansel and Art Simone all on the Pitch Please stage, with Joss Russell on the piano all night playing everyone's favourite requests and camp classics. going to be a great night.
That's right. We're just kicking in, actually. We're open Friday, Saturday for our dinner and show throughout December and January, so people can book online at Vaudeville Cabaret on our website. But also we've got a fabulous New Year's Eve cabaret package with Lisa Mann, Passion Couture, and myself running shows that night, and it's a drinks, canapes package, and you can also get that on our website at vaudeville.com.au.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Aaron Skinner and Richard Tuckey talking to The Informer team earlier today. And that's it for another episode of The Informer. We'd like to thank all of tonight's guests for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 for the last time this year to bring you the day's news from an LGBTI perspective.
A podcast of tonight's episode will be available shortly at joy.org.au or your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to like us on Facebook on The Informer on Joy 949 and follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.